Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and I live in Wichita, Kansas. I am a Patreon supporter for Creative Control. I discovered Creative Control some years ago, I think maybe while looking for interviews with Tommy Stinson of The Replacements. And I stumbled across this conversation that Vish had with Tommy Stinson that was really insightful. Vish held his own. I think Tommy can be a little bit of a difficult interview at times. And it went really well, and it really got into some areas that I wasn't expecting. And I thought, gosh, I have to listen to more of this guy and his podcast. Yeah, sometimes I'm not necessarily a fan of the music or musicians that Vish will have on the show, but I always appreciate their creative process a little bit more. And more times than not, though, it does lead me to finding a new musical artist that I'm interested in, or to think a little bit differently about maybe some artists whose work I've overlooked. So, you know, go ahead, and if you've been waiting at all to support Vish and Creative Control, now is probably the best time to do it. I know as a public radio employee here in Kansas, listener-supported broadcasting, whether it's podcasts or radio itself, really isn't a thing of the past. It's actually very much a thing of both the present and the future. So, yay Vish, yay Creative Control.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today.
Creative Control with Vish Khanna.
Ian Grant and Evan Laffer are good friends and music lovers who each live in respective cities in the state of California. Acquaintances since high school, Grant and Laffer became closer friends after graduating and were drawn together by their deep love of music and other mutual interests. Sometime in the summer of 2020, they began a podcast called Jokermen, which started as a freeform conversational deep dive into some of the lesser-known and nuanced aspects of Bob Dylan's work, but has since evolved into an equally clever and funny analysis of music by the likes of Lou Reed, John Cale, and other members of the Velvet Underground. Marquis Smith in the fall, and who and whatever else strikes them as worth further exploration. As the Jokerman mindset and this popular podcast continue to foster good-humored community among serious music fans, Ian and Evan and I connected recently for a discussion about California life, my own appearance on their show to discuss David Berman and the Silver Jews, Evan's band Dub Thompson, and Ian's very cool dad and his own interest in music journalism, the band's Ought in American football, our shared love of Bob Dylan and other things that we have in common, their work with Stephen Hayden on another Dylan podcast that they make together called Never Ending Stories, why we make podcasts and their cultural pervasiveness and persistence as a dialectical force these days, the Jokerman's generous internet presence, future plans, and much more. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners just like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thank you so much for supporting the show at the Patreon. That's the primary source of revenue for all the work that goes into this show. So thank you again for supporting Creative Control at patreon.com/creativecontrol. With additional support from Blackbird Music, a well-stocked record store with locations in Edmonton and Calgary, and very friendly personnel who will happily help you find whatever it is you're looking for. Hey, if you're not in Edmonton or Calgary, you just go to blackbird.ca and you type in what you want. Maybe you want a record by Bob Dylan or Lou Reed or John Cale or the Velvet Underground or The Fall or somebody. Well, as I say, go to blackbird.ca, type it in, see what happens. It'll come right to your house. They'll figure it out. Blackbird.ca for more information. Plus, in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario. This is episode 761, not to be confused with Highway 61, of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Ian Grant and Evan Laffer of the Jokerman podcast, with your host, me, Vish Khanna. Hi, Ian. How's it going?
It's going great, Vish. How are you?
I'm well. It's nice to see you again. Where in the world are you today?
I'm here in sunny San Francisco. It was not this way just a few hours ago. I woke up in the middle of the night to a hailstorm and thunder. But wouldn't you know, the clouds have rolled east, rolled right out, and it's a little cold, but beautiful, bright blue skies, yellow sun. Doesn't get any better. It's California.
You're bringing this up, I think, because as we're speaking, California has experienced some freakish winter weather. I mean, freakish for that area. Is that true?
It's been a pretty heavy-duty winter, yeah. There's been, there was a whole long atmospheric river sequence at the beginning of January, but since then, it's just, like, kind of kept going. So it's pretty refreshing as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, you don't mind the climate calamity. You think this is good.
Well, I think some water on the ground in California.
I think that's enough from Ian. I think that Ian has made his opinion on the climate clear now. He thinks climate change is good. I'm the other one from the show who might have a more nuanced opinion.
Clearly you're there, Evan. Evan, where in the world are you?
Partly cloudy Los Angeles, California. it's partly cloudy.
Is it that different? The San Francisco is what, north of LA? Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay. That's correct.
6-7 hours drive, 350 miles, something like that.
Okay, so we're, in Canada we got the kilometers. You guys got the miles. That's fine. I get it. We'll do a transcript later to explain and convert everything for everyone listening. But Evan, the weather has also been weird in LA.
It's been cool. I like that it is an actual winter. I honestly do enjoy it, especially because I have been sort of bi-coastal by fate, accident, and choice over the last 10 years. So I like the New York thing of there being a colder time of the year and then a warmer one. And it turns out that I didn't miss out on it this year. It's cold. It's brisk.
How long have you been in L.A. there, Evan?
Well, this has been, I guess it'll be just about exactly a year since I moved back here from New York City.
Oh, you're from there, though?
I'm from here. I've just been back and forth constantly at various points, a year here, most of the last 7-10 years have been in New York or LA or some combination.
You're a big city guy. New York. You like the big cities.
I like those two. Those are the two ones. There's kind of, they're connected, but they have this sort of inconvenient thing that you have to do to get to the other side of town.
Yes, of course. And New York is a place that has seasons. Also experiencing weird weather from what I hear from my friends in New York. But so LA, what I'm getting at is, gentlemen, my understanding of California is it's less of a seasonal. It's kind of always spring, summery weather. Is that right, Evan? That's the perception.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that there is something to that. There's something to the lack of the dramatic changes visibly that I think lends certain character to California. Although San Francisco, where Ian lives, is like just a different thing altogether. It's always like it is here right now. It's always like cool and brisk, I would say. Almost always.
Yeah, summer is actually San Francisco winter, as they refer to it up here, which I've just learned, you know, relatively recently. But June, July is pretty cold, gray, wet kind of weather. And then come September, October, that's the real heat wave, fire season kind of stuff. That goes for Northern and Southern California.
So you got the fires. Now you got the relatively heavy winter. You got the earthquakes. Ian, why do you live in California?
I hope we don't have those.
Well, I've heard tell that you can have those things. Ian, how long have you been in San Francisco and in California?
Oh, I've been in California for 27 of my 30 years. I've been in San Francisco for just coming up on 2 at this point. I, like Evan, also had only ever lived in Los Angeles or New York up until 2 years ago when I moved here from New York.
Okay.
In the middle of the pandemic, to be closer to girlfriend's family and friends and stuff, and just be back in California because that's where I belong.
I see. Okay, I got it. Well, I appreciate this little geography lesson. It's a little bit of anthropology or whatever that I do at the beginning of these chats. I want to commend you both on your fabulous podcast, Jokerman, and thanks again, by the way, for having me on, because I'll tell you, that had a ripple effect. People were messaging me really? All over the place. I don't want to get into a thing where you guys get a percentage, but I have a modest Patreon and people are like, I'm contributing because I heard you on Jokerman. I'm like, oh,
hell yeah.
So I'm like, wow, that's very sweet. And I got personal messages saying, for those who haven't heard it, listening to us right now, Ian and Evan kindly had me on to talk a lot about David Berman, Silver Jews. Specifically, we were meant to talk about the album Lookout Mountain, Lookout Sea. We did eventually do that, right?
Eventually we got there.
Evan, was that unusual for you to have a guest on who goes on and on about whatever, and then you have to...
No, I think that the way that we've tended to approach things is like, well, when there's a guest that I think has like a special connection to the subject that we want to talk about, we're much happier to talk about those things, those direct connections and personal remembrances and experiences, than we are just going to like go by rote through the record. And you know, that's always going to be more interesting, but no, we did both. And we tend to kind of go all over the place, but it was great to have you on to give insight on, you know, the actual experiences you had with David Berman. I think it enriched talking about that record at all.
Yeah. Like, you know. I appreciate that. I think as it worked out, I'd actually interviewed David about that record, and that's one of the reasons it stuck out for me. Ian, just to get your take on it, was that a normal episode? You both, I think, I don't know which one of you controls your email account.
That would be me.
Ian. You sent some very kind words, Ian. I appreciated them. That felt good, right?
Absolutely. No, I mean, we ended up getting like two and a half, three episodes out of just the one conversation with you, because we'd had the whole 2-hour chat about the record, you know, that was, you know, we moved on to towards the end. But before that, we had a whole hour long just kind of history lesson from you about your ups and downs and just kind of life story with David. And I know, speaking for me as someone who didn't know David, came to him, you know, later in my life. And, you know, I was up on Purple Mountains when it came out. But obviously, as we know, that was towards the end of his. you know, it just getting the opportunity to talk to someone who knew him and had conversations with him and had, you know, some sort of a mutual a bond was intensely rewarding because he's such a unique, you know, kind of special figure. And we have also or had also in the past tried to get other conversations set up with other folks who also knew him. And people have been, you know, reticent to talk about it. So just getting the opportunity to pick your brain about it was, you know, one of the most rewarding conversations I think we've had on our show.
Oh, that's very, very sweet and kind, and I appreciate that. And I'm, it's all, as I said to you at the time, I feel like David gave us and me in particular, I feel like many, I don't feel special, but I think David was giving me some gifts on a personal level, and that's how I feel about it. I feel a lot of gratitude. Your show does this with all sorts of people, this sort of multi-layered and multifaceted look at art and people and individuals. I want to talk about this show for those who maybe aren't familiar. But first of all, Evan, I gather there's a California connection. It sounds like there was some sort of New York connection as well. Evan, can you talk a little bit about your relationship with Ian? How do you know Ian?
Well, we went to high school together, technically. Like Ian was, you were a senior. Yeah, when I was a freshman. But I was always kind of friends with older kids. I knew some of the people who were older, like in your grade, even when I started high school, just from like doing like community theater stuff. I like knew all these kids who were in theater, but also a lot of them were in music, like just made music or were creative in other ways. There's like a couple kinds of theater kids, and some of them are the type that will later make a band. And those were the kind that I ended up being friends with.
What was your entry point into theater, though, Evan? What were you interested in doing? Acting, singing?
I just did all that kind of stuff as a kid instead of sports because I didn't take to it. And I think I was more, I was just a lot more successful at doing little routines, and I liked the storytelling aspect of plays and classic musicals, I'll say. Maybe not so much like post 80s anything,
like,
you know. I like the, yeah, I don't know, I like The Music Man and Carousel and South Pacific, those ones that still have like old standards on them, like, you know, Some Enchanted Evening is on South Pacific, you know.
Yeah,
anyway, I'm an old queen basically. I met Ian just through friends who were in a band, and I think that's kind of just how we were acquainted. And then I was just aware of our mutual tastes being kind of adjacent over many years. And eventually, I mean, at various points, we would like bump into each other, go to shows together. And I think that's basically the origin of our acquaintance. Is that acquaintanceship? Is that right?
I don't have dictionary.com open at the moment or a thesaurus, but I'll
I mean, we'll is accept, that right, Ian?
We'll accept that answer.
Is that how it went down, Ian Grant?
Yeah, that sounds accurate. You know, we I think got more in touch with each other after high school, as far as I can remember, and
yeah,
more
that's
online
true.
Than anything. And there was a lot of back and forth. You know, Evan was mostly in New York and I was mostly in Los Angeles. And then I came out to New York and you were there briefly. And then you went back to Los Angeles when I was in New York. And then I think did it again or something. I don't know. It's been a lot of back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, and then June 2020 rolled around and, you know, we didn't have anything better to do. And so this ended up being the product of just time to kill.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. That's what all these things are. We're just killing time. Even this. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
No, this is fun. I like doing things. I like these conversations because I end up learning about the world, I find. So I don't know if you found that. You're focused on specific people and subjects, but I find it very insightful myself, this realm. I know those of us in the podcast realm are often mocked these days. There's too many of us. There's too many things. And we can get into that in a moment. But Evan, just back to you for a second, because I want to home in a little bit on your music background. Are you yourself someone who plays music, an instrument of any kind?
Yeah, I play the drums, or I was in a band. It still exists on some level. My friend Matt and I were in a band, and we toured a couple times. We were on a label, and it's one that you've heard of, but you haven't heard of our band because it no longer exists.
Can you home in on the band name and the label?
It's called it's a secret. Yeah, it's called Dub. Well, it's secretly Canadian.
Oh, I know that. Oh, I know that label. Quite well.
It's, it was on Dead Oceans. It was a band called Dub Thompson. It's the product of two friends who were making music in each other's parents' house during high school in suburban Southern California. And eventually we were produced by one Jonathan Rado. It was the first record he ever produced. Longtime friend Jonathan Rado, who is now a well-known producer of indie rock records.
And we rock, were like rock his, records. The Killers.
And rock. Yeah, full-on wow. rock and roll and rock and just music albums. Long-playing records. And he let us we just like went to, I think we were like 19, and we went to Indiana, to Bloomington, and we're in this tiny little like rented house and just had all these songs, and so we recorded them, and then that got handed off to the label at Secretly Canadian, and Secretly Group and Dead Oceans in particular picked it up. And it was a time around 2012, 2013, when the idea that two frantic white boys making like little post-punk freakouts was like commercially viable, maybe. Like uh-huh. that was maybe something that people would want.
Yeah.
It was a very different time. And so they let that happen. And we went on a tour with Ought, the great Montreal band.
Oh, I love those guys. Extent. They're friends of mine.
They're terrific. Yeah. And we were on their, it was our first tour in theirs as a band.
Do you know, not to interrupt you, but they were, apparently, I had them all on this show together. And apparently it was their first ever interview.
Wow. Yeah. Thank see, you. That's one of the crazy things about that group was like, they were truly, truly great. Like we saw them like 30 plus times, obviously. And yeah. It was really inspiring to see them. And I can't believe that. I think that period, the fact that like a band like mine could get signed to a label like that, there was a lot of that going on. There were a lot of these little like duos making yeah. music that could all be described with certain catch-all terms. But Ought was a group that I think was far better than most of them.
Yeah.
And so that was like an honor to tour with them. And then we toured with Foxygen, which was Jonathan Rado and Sam France, that were longtime friends from mm-hmm. way, way back. And then we didn't do anything else. But because I had to go back to college and nobody bought the record. But some people still like it when they hear it.
Well, I'm going to check it out right after because I'd heard the name, but I can't say I'm like overly familiar with it. But that sounds like quite a trajectory. And so before I move on to Ian with similar questions, also, I play the drums and I'm currently, for the first time in years, working on a project with like a hero of mine remotely where I play drums and they add bass. And now we're trying to figure out collaborators and it's going right now. Like today, I've been distracted by this today. I have behind That's us, fantastic. There's a list of potential collaborators behind the Zoom window. I mean, I have a Word doc with like a bunch of people. I'm going to email today to be like, hey, weird idea, but I'm working with someone and we have a thing. Do you want to put stuff on top of it? Anyway, I won't get into it. All I'm saying is, Evan and Ian, great. I think we're pretty similar. I'm old. I'm older than you. But I think we might be more similar than maybe we realize. Or maybe we do realize it because we've been on each other's shows. All this to say, yeah. Are you playing much these days, Evan?
Well, actually, Matt Poulos, my bandmate, and I, he lives nearby now. Like I live in Silver Lake and he lives in East Hollywood. So we finally, after many years where I was apart in or away in away from my wife, Matt, in New York. Now I do see him all the time. So we actually have been like talking about it would be cool to put out or record music 10 years hence after like now that we're yeah. adult people, but yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah,
no, it's good.
God willing.
That's good. And it's, it feels like there's a lot going on in your life, Evan and Ian. And I'm glad that maybe you're seeing these opportunities as, you know, your Jokerman audience might want to check out your music. You know what I mean? Like, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's
maybe.
Cool. Ian, similar line of questioning, and sorry for keeping you out of the loop here for so long, but you work with
that's
Evan.
Okay.
You know what it's like. And you've been, and you talk to me. We tend to like to chat.
Yeah.
Ian, do you play music? Have you ever played music of your own there?
Nope, nothing.
Never, not, you don't know how to play an instrument?
Nope.
Interested in music journalism?
More so that, yeah. I'm strictly an outside observer, practitioner, not my line of work.
So when did you begin to get interested in music, perhaps as a lad or you know, a teen or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, my dad, I've talked about this on our show, you know, many times, and my dad has actually been on our show several times, but he himself was, you know, a bit of a head and made it his mission to ensure that his one and only son grew up with good music taste, or what he considers good music taste, and it did work out. But yeah, you know, when I was a kid, he just tried to expose me to all the shit that he liked. He came from, you know, he was a huge Bob head, was also invested and involved in like the Los Angeles punk scene, you know, around like the 80s. X is one of his favorite bands of all time, if you've ever heard of them. You know, I got the chance to see John and Xene play many times as a kid. This was also around, you know, the return of rock, you know, early 2000s kind of thing. So he took me to see the White Stripes and the Strokes. I think we went to the Sex Pistols reunion show.
Oh, wow.
At the Greek Theater once.
How old were you at that Sex Pistols show, if I might ask?
I would have been 10 or 11.
Wow.
11. So,
do you have any sense memories of that experience?
I don't really remember too much. I remember it was at the Greek in Los Angeles, and someone in front of us was smoking weed. And I think we saw Morrissey there just sitting in the audience. Although most of this is just me having been told this by my father.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
After the fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, from a young age, it was something that I was interested in, and going forward into the future, you know, it just continued to be sort of an obsession of mine. And at a certain point, I just locked on to Bob himself and decided, you know, I needed to get to the bottom of this guy and figure out everything that this guy had ever had to say or do. And I did that to an extent just on my own, although I didn't even really break into the real depths of the depths until we started the show. But was just something that had always been an interest and continued to grow and blossom over time for me.
That's lovely. And just to, as I did with Evan, establish some mutual connections or experiences in what year is it right now? It's 2023. So in 2022, I want to say, I was invited to attend the opening of the grand VIP opening of the Bob Dylan Center in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
It's like April, May or something, right?
Yeah, actually, I'm gonna take 1 week back because I randomly took two. I don't travel much these days, not like you guys gallivanting across your country and elsewhere. I think I took two random, seemingly random trips. I went to visit my parents and attend a funeral service for Dallas Good of the Sadies in Toronto in April. Mm. And who's in the room? John Doe. Then the next week, I believe it was the next week or within 2 weeks, I head down to Tulsa because of this thing. Who's in the room with me? John Doe.
John was there again. That's
I
right.
thought that was really odd that like I, you know, on some level, I thought that was odd, but it also spoke to, I guess, the community I was a part of. So I'm just letting you know that, Ian, you and I are very similar. I don't know if I've established that, but I feel like we're similar people. We have similar experiences. So, yeah. Anyway, it's very go ahead, Evan. You were going to say something?
You run your show basically by yourself, which means that, yeah, I guess you do have some of Ian's good qualities, some of my qualities. So you have, you know, a one-man Jokerman kind of operation going on where it takes
all the good parts of the two of us and none of the
shit. We're like Tweedly D and Tweedly Dumb over here.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a
hop on each other's heads to get
it is a one-man Jokerman mindset operation. Yes, I suppose that's a way of putting it. Now let's get to I appreciate all that background and Evan, We should ask you about your bob-headedness, just because Ian explained it. Do you have some bob background you want to share before we... Because just so that's clear to people, this podcast, Jokerman, has evolved. It is not just one thing. It can be lots of different things. But to my understanding, and based on messages I got from people in bands like American Football who said, Vish, based on your Bob Dylan interest, you should really be on that Jokerman podcast. Do you want me to?
Oh, yeah. Steve from American Football was a great early guest of ours.
Yeah. And he's the one who connected. He reached out to me because he's a fan of my show and they were on once. And he said, this show's great. And, you know, he knew I've talked about on my show that my master's thesis for my English degree was about the history of the pop culture industry as told via Love and Theft. I just talk about.
I want to read that.
I know. I can.
Yeah, send that to me.
I can send that to you right after we're done. I will say I got an A on it, but it was a bit of a rush job. I feel like I finished it the day I finished it and submitted it on August 16th, 2002. That was the, what was that? The 25th anniversary of Elvis Presley's death. Bob Dylan's playing in Toronto that night at the Molson Amphitheater in Toronto. That was the first of like six shows I saw on that run. And I went and traveled and I saw him in Fargo, North Dakota and Saskatoon and Calgary and Edmonton and went on a bit of a road trip. Anyway, my part of my thesis with Love and Theft and the history of the pop culture industry is that Tweedledee and Tweedledum or... I keep doing this. Is it Tweedledum and Tweedledee? I'm the guy who wrote the thesis. Whatever.
They're interchangeable.
They're interchangeable. That song I said was, I argued, and it was probably based a little bit on something I read from Sean Wieland's, that maybe it had something to do with Elvis Presley and Elvis's twin. He was born with a twin. And if you go through the lyrics, it's like his master's voice is calling me, RCA Records. You know what I'm saying, guys?
With the dog.
Yeah, with the dog. And then that's what Elvis signed to. And there's stuff about the song. Anyway, I wrote this whole thing. Then I go to the show. I don't think he did it that many times. That night, Dylan plays that song. And I was like, okay, I'm going to get an A. I'm going to get an A on my thesis. Like, that's how I felt. Got a soft A, 82% or something like that. And I was like, that's fine. I don't care anymore. That was such a slog. I'll send it to you with this caveat that it's not perfect. But I thought I've sent it to Tim Heidecker and a couple other people who've said, wow, that's kind of interesting. Guys, we have a lot in common. I just want to say that once again. I feel like we
do. Yeah.
Evan.
We have more in common than you might even realize, not to interject. Just I also attained a master's in English. And so I'm making use of that or not by just talking to people about music on podcasts.
Nice. Did you? People are often surprised that my undergrad thesis was about the pervasiveness of hip hop culture, and then my master's was about Dylan, and I took it down this circuitous road, much as that album does. Ian, were you able to explore your love of music in your English? Or sorry, was it an English degree? You said.
Yeah, not quite so much. It was more literature, but you know, you can see on the screen behind me, I'm a bit of a books head as well.
Yeah.
So, that could be something else to explore in the future.
You know who likes books and writes books is that Bob Dylan. So I think, I think the three of us and Bob Dylan have a lot in common. That's what I'm getting at.
Well, Evan, if you both have masters, you know, I am like you in the sense that I'm constantly making sort of wild, connections between things like Bob Dylan and Elvis Presley and his stillborn twin brother and so forth.
Yeah.
Scott Walker has a song about that. I keep mentioning it on the podcast every 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I guess you asked my Bob origin story. I just, you know, like anybody else, like heard those first records, like when you do, like when you're 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. 21. And at a certain point, I think, yeah, like I really loved, like I loved like the beat writers and stuff, you know, in high school. And
yeah.
I was, I think, directly funneled from that into a love of the early Dylan stuff, because there's such a sense of connective tissue between, say, like Jack Kerouac or Allen Ginsberg and the rest and Burroughs and Dylan's lyricism, especially on like Blonde on Blonde and those, the big three records So I think I just had this hardcore belief like boiled into me about his place as being like that, being like one of these types of guys, one of these writers. And that made me interested in everything he would ever do, because I just was so moved, in, like so many people are, by those early ones. And then it's fascinating to find out that like he did all this stuff that's supposed to be bad. And then you listen to it and I don't think you just start wondering, like, is it bad? Like, and then Tempest came out in 2013. And so that was like the first record, like Bob record. I really remember like the rollout and going out and buying it and stuff. And then I just was like, ride or die. And I just wanted to go back and cure it all. And like, you know, I don't think either of us went really into the deepest corners of the discography until we started doing this together, which is why so many of our early episodes now, if we were to listen to them, we would want to slap ourselves silly.
Yeah, anyone out there listening to this show and finding out about our podcast, skip the first like year of the episodes that are in the backlog for us, not only because of audio quality sounding like shit, but take quality being equally, if not even
well,
shittier.
You know, this is like musicians, we're learning in public, right?
That's right. Yeah. We're growing up in public,
growing
to quote
public.
Another subject of ours.
That's right. we record things, we present them in public. I think, for whatever reason, as podcast people, as audio broadcasters, whatever you want to call it, I've put ourselves on this hamster wheel where it's once a week, twice a week. We're evolving, you know, whereas musicians, it's like I spent a year making a record, 3 years since I last made a record. And I learned a lot from taking those songs on the road or just about the recording process. Mm-hmm. So you're going to hear a gradual evolution in my discography. Whereas I think with us, and for whatever reason, like I said, we're just doing, most of us have been trained like dogs to create content on a regular basis. And it's interesting. So I just wanted to do a slight tangent rant about our plight and how much work this is.
The plight of the podcaster.
The plight of the podcaster. Well,
it's someone think of the podcaster.
A question for you, Vish, about that is like, I don't know, do you really feel like it's, I don't know, maybe this is less of a question or just like an observation on that. Like, I think if you want to do this, I think that it actually, the only way you can is to get into what I think is actually a pretty healthy headspace of like, not thinking of it as being like embarrassing to say the same things over and over again.
Exactly.
And in fact, just like, yeah, like there's so much engagement. Like you were talking about receiving all these comments and questions and things and critiques and whatever. I feel like we are what keeps us maybe doing it and not getting like tired of it or feeling jaded or whatever is that it feels like it's just a conversation that we are just a part of that keeps going and going. And as long as we're all interested in it, it's like, I don't think we're going to get tired of it.
You have to kind of not overthink it. I think like a musician wondering about their, whether they're fulfilled artistically or whether a record doesn't sell as well as the last time. Most of them, if they can, just keep going. And I have the same mentality. I'm trying not to overthink this, but I'm just saying, I know we were joking and Ian made fun of me for invoking the plight of the podcaster, but
I love that phrase.
But I have the same thing. Like my show has certainly from episode one, the first five episodes, I thought this was going to be a totally different kind of show. And then I realized it was too much work and I was one person. Like it was like maybe I'll have three interviews an episode, like a magazine type radio show. And I'm like, why? Oh, wow. Why am I doing this? And then I evolved. And then I also, you know, when I started, there was a whole thing about sort of monologue culture where the host sounded, a lot of hosts still do this, I think, where they think that they should spend 10 minutes pontificating or opining about something or thinking they're really clever. And as you may know now, if you've ever heard my show, I'm trying to just do a quick biographical overview of my guests for someone who may not know and get right to it. And that's just something that I really, it's a mixture of self-loathing, but also like, just get to it. Like, why do you think you're this interesting? Just get to it. Sure. And then you go, and then your personality comes through in your line of conversation. So, sorry, we got a little meta there, everyone. I just wanted to talk a little bit about, our shop and get to where we got to. By the way, Evan, I have a penchant for correcting you. I believe Tempest is 2012.
I was going to say that too.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, I should be flogged for that mistake, especially because I am Tempest's biggest fan. But
anyone should know the year.
I just want to say that sticks out for me personally, because I wrote something about the album for the company I worked with at the time, was a big one, and the Dylan camp blurbed it, and that to me was the beginning of, as I think I try to do this with all humility, but I can't help but get excited talking to fellow fans. There's now a history of them blurbing me as just Vish. Like, I feel like just small Vish in Canada, and they have a history of sending me things.
And it says small Vish in Canada.
Tiny Vish in Canada. I'm just saying, I feel like, as you probably have discovered too, doing this show, you enter the realm of heroes. And like people you admire. Ian, has this experience of doing the show, which we haven't still yet contextualized for people, we'll get there in a moment, forgive me. Has this experience, though, been, I gather it's been fulfilling, but has it given you an access to a people and a world that you weren't expecting?
Yeah, definitely. I think that it has demystified a lot of what is going on, you know, behind the scenes, because for so long, you know, you just think of these people, or the way that I've thought of them at least, you know, are these legends who are working together and creating this beautiful and brilliant art and putting it out. And then you might go see them, you might be in the room with them, right? If you go buy a ticket and then you go to see the show, and then, you know, that's as close as you get for 3 or 4 years. And the only other dispatch you ever get, you know, is maybe they'll be, you know, slightly active on a social account, or you'll get an EP or a talk show appearance or something once a year. But, you know, they seem very distant and very far away from you. Yeah. And, you know, in reality, you know, I think what we both come to learn is that they're all, you know, this is calling what we do, you know, all three of us, and what musicians do a job is not exactly correct in the same way that, like, working at an office is a job. But it also is, you know, it is a job in a sense, in that it's something they need to work at and get up and do day after day after day, and they earn money from it, and they rely on their livelihood for it. And so there's a whole just fucking mechanism, excuse me, sorry, of...
you can curse. This is a safe space for cussing. It's okay.
That's just right. A regular mechanism, okay? Take that back.
That's right.
I'm sorry. Was that sexual? I didn't realize. I didn't mean...
No,
okay.
It's not.
Just making sure. Yeah. Sorry, guys.
I just drop fuck into my everyday language.
It's a fucking...
Some strange... exactly.
You guys curse on your show, don't you? I've heard you curse.
Yes.
We certainly
much.
Yeah, okay. Sorry.
Anyways, there's this whole mechanism behind the scenes of just like people making this stuff happen. And so getting the opportunity to like talk to publicists, you know, and PR people to get get interviews lined up with, and getting, you know, like the Light in the Attic guys sent us both copies of the new Lou release a couple months ago, the archive thing that was just, you know, really fantastic, like amazing treat as far as I'm concerned. But
it's
just like part of their job is just to send that to us, you know, for free.
Yep.
And I think most significantly, at least, you know, most recently, Stephen Hayden, you know, our big brother and podcast co-host on our new show, Never Ending Stories, you know, he wrote the liner notes for the new Bob bootleg series Fragments, and didn't say Jokerman by name, but alluded very heavily to us in an official set of liner notes in an official Bob Dylan Columbia Records release. And so even if that's as close as we ever get to the Bob camp, that alone, I think, makes this whole project worth it.
Evan, you'll be more frank about this than Ian, because Ian is has more candor. Did you ask Stephen why he didn't mention, because I reviewed that set and I mentioned you guys by name because I knew who he was alluding to. Do you know why he didn't reference the show by name? Because I will also say, in the Springtime in New York bootleg series, my friends and Daniel Romano's outfit are mentioned right. by name in the liner notes. And yes. I had them in advance because I was writing about it. They sent me like a Word doc. The Dylan Camp sent me a Word doc version. And I said, hey, guys, can you keep a secret? I hope they don't hear this. But can you, did you know about the liner notes? Dan's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, okay, if you can keep a secret, I'm going to share this with you. And he freaked out a little bit in his own calm manner. But one of his bandmates, Roddy, who's a huge fan of Dylan's, bigger than Dan, was able to share that with his father before he passed away.
Oh, wow.
So I would not normally divulge that I'd snuck some information on to a band, but since they were mentioned, I really am happy I got to do that and have a role in Roddy's father having this amazing amount of pride in his That's son fantastic.
Yeah,
for his
so,
band.
So you're
mentioned.
Really setting Stephen up to face the music here, because Stephen, what if a loved one of ours was on their deathbed and I couldn't show them that I was mentioned.
Did you ask him why, though? Why no?
No, I think that, I mean, the answer is that he had yet to really officially join the Jokerman
universe?
LLC, the universe.
Multiverse?
The not a multiverse.
Sorry.
It's not that.
It is a limited liability company, that's for sure.
I think, you know, frankly, we just weren't totally vetted in the eyes of one Stephen Hayden, probably. You know, it's like we're slightly disreputable on some level, which maybe we're coming out of. But I don't know. I mean, I don't take it personally. I thought it was kind of coy and not not offensive or dismissive.
Well,
not to name us.
It's an interesting point you raise, Evan. And I want to get into where this show came from. But since it's germane to what you were just saying, Evan, Ian, the show has appealed to people, I think, for one reason, because it's both extremely reverent and well-researched, but also very irreverent on some level. If something is bad or strikes you as cheesy or corny, you're not afraid to talk about it, whether it's Bob, Lou, John Cale, whoever. And I think that appeals to people. They feel like they're getting the real deal on some level. Was that a conscious decision, maybe? First of all, do you agree with my characterization of how you and Evan tend to approach your subject matter? Because I know it's pretty
well
freeform. No research. Yeah, well, we've already.
I would say that it's not. I don't know, Ian. Sorry, he asked you, but I will. When it comes to the research thing, I think that at least my attitude toward it has been like, I really think that, you know, that's a valid criticism that could be leveled at us, is that we don't come at it from like a documentarian perspective where we comb through every fact. And Ian way too often has gone like, on Wikipedia, but there's real information on there, I will say. The point being, I think that we've kind of come to the talking about this stuff from the perspective of like, what did the artist give to the public? Like, what did they give to you? What is this record? Like, what am I, as just a person listening to this thing, supposed to get about it? Like, and I kind of like to think of it that way, because frankly, that's all you do get, really. There's no reams of text that Bob Dylan gave about Knocked Out Loaded. It's just this album with the same cover on the back as the front, and you have what you have. And it is kind of something that I'm grateful for that. It is an invitation to not try to comb through and research everything, but
sorry,
it's a perfect opportunity for two guys to just talk.
Sorry, research it. Though for me and Ian, sorry, I want to get your take on this. And also maybe because we've talked about your music backgrounds, I want to get your comedy backgrounds, because your show is funny and it's resonating with a lot of really great comedians who I respect as well. So I want to get to those two things. When I say research, though, by the way, Evan, I don't mean academic. I mean, you guys seem to listen deeply.
Sure.
I think listening to a record, when people ask me how long it takes to prep for an interview, I can't really, I think they mean the questions, which I don't even have. I don't write anything down. I will pick out lyrics right. and might make a note. My notes will say like basket, which means I'm supposed to remember to ask about a basket because there's some reference to it. But I learned long ago not to write questions out because it takes me out of the moment. But
yeah.
The research is listening, and my family can attest to this. It means listening to an album, 50 times. It means reading a book sometimes more than twice, honestly, if I have the time. That to me is research. I'm not writing things down and writing an essay. I'm immersing myself in the work. So Evan, does that resonate? That's what I mean by research.
Yeah, that's true. And I think that's true. Like Ian, I think we both kind of feel that way, that it's like, I know we're good researchers if what it means is to really try to think a lot about the music.
That's what I meant.
About the artist. Yeah.
That's what I meant.
Some people say research and meet, and they are kind of upset that it's like, well, you got like this was wrong. Like that's the difference between us and Dylanologists.
Sure. When I said 2012, not 2013, I was doing some research.
No, I appreciated
that.
It
resonated with me because I lost that job in 2013. So I remember that I wrote the review the previous year.
Yeah, I like to be Ian. Giving real info. I don't want to be in.
No, no, it's not fake news. It's the Jokerman. I think it's legit news. And sorry, Ian, if I can remember what the original question was, do you?
Do I remember the question? The show is reverent, but
yes,
also irreverent.
Thank you.
And we do research, but it's also funny.
Yes.
Something along those lines. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have a couple thoughts about this and I've spewed, you know, some of them out on the show in the past. But in general, I mean, I don't think of podcasts as like the arena for deeply kind of, academic type of material. And I think the Academy is where that belongs. And that is a very select and self-selecting group of people who are interested in that. You know, you obviously are familiar with that yourself, Ish. But, you know, in general, people just want to, like, you know, the man on the street, to steal a phrase from Bob Dylan, and sorry to gender it, but the person on the street, the average folks out there just want to hear people talk about stuff that they like and talk about it in a way that feels real and human to them. And so I certainly like want to know what I'm fucking talking about.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the knowledge has kind of accreted over time. You know, it's not a matter of like doing a deep sort of dive into some sort of archive for one particular subject. It's just coming back to these same albums, these same people, and seeing the way they connect over time, and building a really kind of broad and deeper well of knowledge. Because I certainly know a hell of a lot more about all this shit today than I did, you know, 3 years ago. And so you can draw on that, you know, when you're on the show, when you're talking about stuff. But at the same time, I think a lot of this, to me at least, like I and this kind of segues, I guess, a little bit into the comedy aspect that you were mentioning. Like when I listen to podcasts, there are like two types of podcasts, right? There are hangout podcasts and there are scripted podcasts.
Yeah.
And I know scripted podcasts, that's where the ads are. That's where, you know, the big podcast producing studios are. That's where a lot of the money goes. That's obviously not what you do, Vish. That's not what we do. That's just not what I'm interested in when I'm listening to a show. I think of it more as like a friendship simulator, if anything. And so being able to just talk to someone and, you know, have a real relationship and a real rapport with them. And then on top of that, talk about a subject that you both are interested in and that listeners are presumably interested in. And then even beyond that, get guests and other interesting people involved into that existing relationship. Like that's kind of the crux of what the whole thing is about for me.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you flub a date, if you say Tempest came out in 2013, or if you, you know, don't know the exact track listing on Knocked Out Loaded or something, if you think Clean Cut Kid came out on Down in the Groove instead of Empire Burlesque, you know, at the end of the day, who gives a shit on that?
No, and
it's really a matter of...
My brain is mush now. There's so much... I was saying this to someone, I was talking to someone yesterday that I'm on a... I mentioned the hamster wheel, like, as... I'm listening to a new music constantly to prepare for these interviews, and I don't retain the music the way I did as a kid when I was listening to the same. I've listened to Wu-Tang Clan for the whole summer every day, and still to this day I know the lyrics to 36 Chambers, but that's not the case for more recent records for me. That's just not the case. Like it is a weird part of the consumption, but I think it also speaks to the way people consume things now. And to follow up on what you were just saying, Ian, about the way academia works versus a podcast, I'm like 20 years removed from academia, to be frank with you. Like I worked at a university,
to know that you didn't want to be there.
Well, I guess what I'm wondering though is with all this, increase in this kind of discourse, if I might use a university word,
Sure.
I wonder if it's impacting academia. Like if a bunch of these younger people, like you guys are younger than me, you're also out from school, what, seven, eight years, 9 years, something like that from when you would have graduated probably, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I graduated college in 2013 and then I graduated grad school just 3 years ago.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm on the right track. What I'm saying is if people of your vintage are entering this kind of realm or consuming this kind of realm where it's like, in some cases, it's rather educated people trying to have thoughtful conversations, which is, if I may, what university and college is supposed to be about.
Sure.
I just wonder, and I'm not trying to suggest we're going to change the world here, gentlemen, but I just wonder if it's causing a bit of a change in how people dialogue and think about things. Because I think, you know, that big company I was talking about that I used to work for, in around 2012, 2013, they were like, we're out. We can't do podcasts anymore. We can't figure out how to make money. The interest is waning. Then Serial came along. That show, not the breakfast food. And they said, oh, okay. And then they started to copy that. And then, as you guys maybe know as well, the landscape did change because everyone, it kind of came back. If it was waning, and now I'm just waiting for the bubble to burst. Like, how long are people going to spend how much more time are people going to spend listening to other people talk? But it doesn't seem to be waning. My show's doing better than it ever has, if I may. You guys are doing well. What was my question? Oh, yeah. Evan, do you think that what we're doing and this kind of constant thinking and talking about things might be having like a ripple effect in the culture or something like that?
Yes. I think, yeah, yes, like unequivocally.
Okay.
I think that's partly why I feel even compelled to do it at all is that, you know, you can look at it as like, how long are people going to be continuing to listen to other people talk, but the fact that it's so much of it is guests is actually like the people who it's not just people who want to hear other people talk. There's people who want to talk about it, who want to come on. It's like an active thing of like having these conversations and then people listening to it and then being part of the conversation. And then there's this other side of it, which is like, there's the artists themselves, a lot of the people we've had on are artists, and I think they maybe really the reason why we've had and you've had so many people eager to come on and talk about these things is that artists want to have that other side of the coin be available. Like, and just like we would love to, we want music, you know, people who just talk about music all the time need to listen to it.
Yeah.
I think artists themselves actually really want to talk about music and talk about art. And then everyone else is just listening to both of those. And at some point deciding, well, maybe I want to be the one who talks about this stuff, or maybe I want to be the one who makes it. And I think it really feeds it's part of this ecosystem of art and what you could call it critique or just discourse or whatever. They all feed into each other. And I think it makes everything more fertile to have an active culture of people involved on the side of like on the front lines, like on stage, and people like us, and have there be this connection that's like forged and is continuous is really valuable. And I think that it actually does bleed into a lot of things that are, you know, I think it's really an important thing to do right now. Because of where we find ourselves with, you know, rock music, it's like this incredibly new thing and it's already at risk of being kind of forgotten. These like core tenets of it, these like main texts are kind of like somebody who's like 5 years younger than me might not know it.
Yeah.
Or even if they do, all they might have to hear about it is somebody saying it's an 8.5 or saying it's a light 3 or whatever. It's like,
and it's fleeting too. Like I said earlier, like people are just moving through this content. Okay, that's over. The album came out. We're never going to talk about it again. Maybe at the end of the year,
cataloging it.
Maybe if it's like makes a year endless, it'll come back. But that's kind of weird.
Right.
Weird too that things don't last. Anyway, Evan, I didn't mean to cut you off, but
Point being, no, I mean I was rambling, but point being that exactly that. It's like there's I think a lot of kids right now, like a lot of younger people. Are interested in music, but like there's this kind of like this like cataloging attitude where it's kind of like, this is a list. Like, it's all list based. Yeah. Like, this is the best records, and it's OK Computer, and then it's Slint, Spiderland. And then it's like, all these kids know these records now.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, there's these foundational artists who are still with us. Like, we're going to look back at some point, and, you know, I personally, and Ian, I'm sure you feel the same way. Like, the thought of looking back later and realizing I didn't do anything to like talk about one of these artists while they're still with us is just like, it makes me sick.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. And I don't want you to vomit. Just calm down. It's okay. No, I appreciate that. Before we move on, Ian, did you want to add anything to what we were just discussing?
Yeah, no, I think that all, you know, I co-sign all of it in general. One other note that's just something that I'm cognizant of, both as, you know, a participant, someone who's actively participating in this now, but also as a consumer, you know, of discourse and media in general, is just like, you know, music, you know, the whole culture industry, the culture criticism industry is like, has undergone a radical transformation over the last couple of years and is still in the process of doing that.
Yeah.
And it's only going to accelerate, I think, into the future. And whether you think that's a good thing or a bad thing, you know, that's just beauty's in the eye of the beholder. But there has been this like hollowing out, you know, of the middle class of the cultural critic, you know, like Entertainment Weekly magazine, which I used to read every fucking week as a kid, you know, when I was 15, and read like their little movie reviews that were written by hacks and, you know, didn't have any sort of insightful commentary. Really, you know, kind of, it's not, you know, Godard writing about.
It's like capsule
John
reviews.
John Ford or something.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was a really important, just like kind of, way to dip my toes into thinking about things in a more considerate kind of manner. And today, yeah, like Evan said, like you've got Pitchfork and you've got All Music and you've got, you know, certain YouTube critics that will avoid, shitting on too much.
Right.
And then you've got, like a zillion random like fan accounts on Twitter and on TikTok and on Instagram and stuff. And there isn't like that central, you know, kind of thing in the middle. Stuff that used to be Melody Maker, Cream, Rolling Stone Magazine, the NME, all of these, you know, kind of essential texts from 70s, 80s, you know, kind of muted journalism. That's just not there anymore. It's either like the absolute heights of the culture, the New York Times, the Pitchforks, you know, the Condé Nast conglomerate at this point, or just absolutely nothing, or not nothing, but just a thousand, you know, a million little voices screaming into the void down below. So I do think that there is a space or a desire as consumers, you know, and I'm coming back to this from my own personal experience as someone who likes to listen to basketball podcasts and politics podcasts and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to hear smart people talk about things that I find interesting in a, you know, casual, conversational, and insightful manner. And I think that's exactly where this whole kind of genre and format fits in.
Well, I appreciate that very much. I think the shift that you were describing in terms of the almost the disillusion of all of these previous behemoths in cultural criticism is that it's just everyone can opine anywhere now. There's just opinions everywhere. But I think you're also right. For some reason, some of us, and I'm not trying to toot our own horn, have gravitated towards these new media platforms to do that same kind of work. Like I used to write about these things, the things I talk about and the interviews I did were primarily for writing. And now for a long time, I've been sharing. The reason I got into this was because I had a radio show with my wife and I realized that I would spend 45 minutes interviewing someone, but the article that it was for was 150 words.
Right.
And I was like, well, what about the other part of it? I want to share the whole thing. So then I would edit it together. I'd say, hey, I know this is for print, but can we pretend we're on the radio and then I'll play it on my morning show next week? And everyone was like, oh, sure. And then I felt fulfilled. Like if you're a purist about this artist, I would think you want to hear more. And this was totally. This was like 2006 or something. And then podcasts started. Anyway, now I'm telling you my story. I'm just saying, I think there's been among people like us, there's a hunger for more. And I think we're trying to fulfill that and express that when there's very few, we can do it ourselves. And that also means there's a glut. But luckily, I don't know if you guys feel fortunate. I feel fortunate for standing out.
Totally.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Totally.
In this field. So what we haven't got to, and I want to get to, I'm mindful of the time. Thank you for this, today, fellas, but the basic question I haven't asked, and I will start with Ian, is the kind of structure of this show. We've talked about your relationship. I think we have a handle on why you'd want to get together and chat. I'm going to begin with Ian. Ian, Jokerman, as I have alluded to, has an organic aspect to it. How did this show start? What was your concept, and how did it get to where it is now? Ian, can you start?
Absolutely, yeah. So it started, as you know, you might be able to tell from the title, as a show about Bob Dylan after Bob Dylan. You know, Bob Dylan, quote unquote, you know, kind of the cultural icon of the mid-60s. So our first conversation was about John Wesley Harding. We kind of took the motorcycle crash moment, which I won't bother to get into right now for those who aren't familiar, but I'm sure most people are. That kind of marks a clear break with where he was before and where he would go after. And just started talking about those kind of albums, because just to tie back to what we were just talking about, there's been a zillion fucking articles written about Blonde on Blonde and Highway 61 and Bring It All Back Home. And at a certain point, you can't read any more about those. There isn't anything new to say.
Yeah.
And there wasn't nearly the level of conversation about almost any other Bob album. Obviously, you got your Blood on the Tracks and your desires and, you know, there's a couple high points in terms of cultural
Slow Train, maybe Oh Mercy, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just in general, you know, there wasn't anyone really talking about that kind of stuff the way that we wanted to talk about it and consider it, besides, again, your capsule All Music review, which I remember for the first time, like, this real kind of, like, visceral reaction I had. I had never listened to Bob Dylan at Budokan, the 1979 live album, before starting the show, because anytime I had gone through the Bob page on AllMusic, that always stood out as like a 1.5 star kind of record, and their write-up was just like, this sucks, totally inessential, don't even bother, don't waste your time. And then as soon as I started listening to it, I was like, holy shit, this is the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And so that alone, I think, has really informed a lot of the kind of approach and mindset that I have tried to take, no pun intended, over the following couple of years. So, you know, we went through the whole Bob discography, and that really took quite some time. We kind of strung it out there as best we could, doing some revisited episodes and getting into things as deep as
an
album covers
about the
or
back, the back
album
cover
covers.
Of-
exactly. But at a certain point, we realized, you know, this had become bigger than Bob and would go on to become bigger than Bob. And so, you know, we had kind of talked about Lou being the next major subject of ours after Bob, if and when we ever got to, you know, after Bob. And then at a certain point, we realized, like, wait, this could be so much bigger than just Lou Reed. This is Lou Reed and John Cale and everyone involved in the Velvet Underground and everyone with kind of associated connections leading off from there. And so that's kind of been our project over the last couple months since last summer. And I think we've got a pretty good handle on what kind of other concepts we can explore in the future.
Hmm.
And at the same time, we have also known and been aware that everyone loves the Bob content. He is the one person who you can just talk about endlessly. And so that's where our more recent show, Never Ending Stories with Stephen Hyden, comes in, where we're exploring a deeply unexplored but deeply bountiful area of Bob's career, the live performances.
Absolutely.
So we're kind of trying to thread the needle and hit everything that we can as much as we can going into the future.
No, that's a thank you for summarizing all of that. I don't know if you guys have, I know you've seen them and probably a lot. I'm up around 40 times, I think, over the last.
Oh, you got not
you got us beat.
Well, I'm older than you. I think I'm older than you. I love them, and I'm sad I haven't been able to see him on this latest run, because by all accounts and from what I've seen, it looks amazing and sounds amazing.
He's killing it.
Yeah, Evan. I want to give you an opportunity to follow up on anything Ian just said about the structure of the show. But one thing I would be remiss in not asking you both about is your social media curation. I know that sounds very corporate and whatever, but it's fucking great. Like, you guys are really funny and you do a really great job of, I don't know. You just you post things and I end up going down these wormholes of like, oh, I didn't even see that before. Like, what the hell about anyone? I will also tell you that based on one of your recommendations, I bought Anthony DeCurtis's Lou Reed biography over the Christmas break.
Yeah.
Devoured it. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I just want to thank you for what you're doing. It feels very generous, is what I'm getting at. I know people like us can be viewed as snarky or full of ourselves or what the hell. Sorry, I always get upset when people are like, be nice if the host didn't talk so much on their show. And I'm like, it's my show. Like, what do you want from
exactly.
Who's going to lead this conversation? It's usually with people who are soft spoken.
Right.
And you can't help but sound like, I don't know. I'm a blowhard.
We have the same thing, you know, especially when you get certain musicians in who aren't used to just shucking and jiving on mic for 90 minutes. It can be a challenge.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. Evan, can you follow up on anything Ian said about the structure of the show? But also, do you want to talk a little bit about how you view the podcast sort of internet presence generally?
Oh, totally. I mean, I think that's a big part of it. I think that the way that we've done, and you said it was generous. It's like the way that I think that we've come to think of it is like, if you want to talk about the artists that we talk about, like the reason why it's Bob Dylan and why it's Lou Reed and why it's Steely Dan or John Cale or Marky Smith, all white guys. Oops. That has nothing to do with the point here. The point being, these guys all care about each other. They all build upon each other. So it's just like, that's the connection. And I think that when you get into any of what those individual artists do, you're getting way more than just them, because they're all artists who care a lot about the past. They all were deeply moved by each other's work, whether they would ever admit it or not. Some are much more inclined to keep that close to the vest. But there's no Lou Reed without Bob Dylan. There's no Velvet Underground without Bob Dylan. This is like fact. When John Cale and Lou Reed were making their first little demos strumming around, they were, you know, John Cale has just said, like, Bob Dylan was like the pinnacle. So we were kind of like, well, we want to throw our hat into this. And so that's established. We now know that just like the rest of music history does not happen the way that we know and love it, if not for like literally for that one guy and then the domino or ripple effect of what he did and then what the Velvets did.
Yeah.
But literally it's Marky Smith's birthday. And I discovered from a Fall fan account, these pictures of his grammar school English like composition journal, and it's got white light, white heat scribbled on the front, and there's a list of every Velvet Underground song that he just like wrote down by hand, just like bored in class ostensibly. And you know, Steely Dan, they like said, you know, it's all, you know, Bob Dylan, big influence. Like these things, to me, it's so much is there, like, just to point out. So when it comes to saying whether, like, calling it generous, it's like, I feel like it's so easy, relatively easy, just to, once you recognize that, flip that, or like, just point a finger with social media, with what we do on the show, just be like, look, it's all there. Like, it's not even hidden that there's this lineage, this connective tissue between these artists that everyone kind of knows by name, at least.
Yeah.
Most, more or less.
Well,
so like,
yeah, when I say generous, I think you're trying to create a community out of this. It's sharing information. So based on what you're saying, I think it's fair to say that between Bob Dylan, the Velvet Underground, The Fall, Steely Dan, Jokerman, Creative Control, we all have a lot in common. I think that's where we've landed. Is this callback not working anymore? I just can't stop saying it. But we're trying to...
I'll try to put a little bow on the rambling I just did. But it was generous. I feel like those guys, that music, these bodies of work, that's generous. And then, like, it's so... it turns out it's really easy to just create a community out of that, because... there's so many people who care deeply about all these things individually, And then to notice, to point out that they're all connected, it's like suddenly everybody realizes that they kind of like the same stuff. They're like, we've all been talking about the same thing the whole time. And there's so much to discover that's like right under the surface about how even those artists feel the same way.
No, but I mean, yes. And I think when I get into Silver Jews and everyone you've just cited, for example, all of the artists except, maybe there's some Steely Dan, I think of Pavement. There's no Pavement without right. everyone you just mentioned. Everyone. And that was, mm-hmm. That was a huge band for me as a teen. It is a huge band for me now. And when I think about the lineage, yeah, I think that's kind of where we're coming from. There's commonality between us. There's lineage between us and them. And we're trying to kind of pick up on that as we start these conversations and have these kinds of, you know, reflective ponderings of these works, some of them 30, 40, 50, 60 years old. So I'm also going to try to put a bow on your bow, if that makes any sense, Evan. And Ian, anything to follow up on based on what we were just discussing?
No, I think that that does it. One thing that occurred to me or that always makes me laugh is, you know, when we started doing the Velvet stuff last summer, someone tweeted at us or left a review on us somewhere, or said, I don't know, it came across the wire somehow, and they were like, this is a great idea that they're going to do a Velvet Underground, Lou Reed, John Cale podcast, but what makes these two the right ones to do it? To which our answer was just, we didn't publicize this or anything, but the answer obviously comes very naturally. It's because we're the ones that are fucking doing it.
Yeah.
If we're not going to do it, who else is?
Yeah. Yeah. Somebody. Being public figures, if you will, you end up getting like, for me, it's like 9 out of 10 is like a complimentary thank yous and gratitude. And then there's always the one or two that stick in your craw questioning why you exist. So anyway, I'm glad you two exist and I appreciate you and your show. Evan, if people want to learn more about Jokerman, the podcast, the LLC, all the other entities around it, where would you like to kind of direct them?
Well, we have Jokerman on Instagram. We've got the Jokerman on, I don't know what the actual, or the @, like it's just Jokerman Podcast on Twitter. And I believe on Instagram it's the same. And then, of course, we have just links on both of those that you can find the actual shows themselves and the Patreons and everything. I do want to just throw in, when it comes to the social media question, I just think we have an appetite for like just trying to find things that are even novel to us to share, like these pictures that like we didn't know existed. There's a lot of really great fan accounts that have been really helpful to us. Like just actually volunteering, like, hey, it's like a guy with like a trench coat and a bunch of watches. Just like, I've got some really rare John Cales if you want. And we're always like, yeah, sure. But yeah, I think we really have, I think it sucks to like look at a fan page and it's just like all these like blurry photos. And a lot of them have like the Getty Images tag thing, like the watermark on it. And I think, it's just out of a sense of love and respect for the subjects that we want to try to like as much as we can put novel images and texts out there. And so it's as fun for us to do that as it is for anybody else to like discover it. If you see it, it's because we were like laughing about it to each other, or just stoked to see it ourselves.
For what it's worth, I enjoy it immensely. Whichever one of you runs those things, you'll see that I try to
joint effort,
engage with them, sometimes share them and, all that stuff. I think you're doing a great job all around. And it also, I'm slightly envious because I'm at that age where I want out of most of the social media. I just kind of do the bare, I'm just like, here's the show, whatever else you want to do. I can't come up with pithy comments, the way I once did. And I'm just like, I'm tired and busy and just take the show. That's the most important thing for me. But you guys do just a great job of curating the experience of not only listening to your show, but immersing your followers in the artists that you're interested in. So I just wanted to commend you on it. And I, You're younger than me, but I look up to you. I need to do more of that stuff is what I'm getting at. So thank you so much.
You're just one man. It is. We've got
I am only one person. That's true. I need a partner, but I also don't always work well with others, I guess. Anyway, my point is this. Ian, it is, as we're speaking, it's very early March. I know you've got plans. I know you probably don't want to share too many of them. For those looking forward to Jokerman, maybe ideas, concepts coming up in the next few months, anything to preview at this point?
Just more, you know, we're going to keep on keeping on. We've got Never Ending Stories going with Steven. So check that out, Never Ending Stories on Patreon. And there's also a pod feed. I don't know when this is going to run necessarily, but as we speak, we've got our first guest episode coming up on that program.
We can say who it is, right?
No. We got to keep it a surprise. We got to keep it a surprise. It's going to be a big
reveal. What about
advertising?
We'll
tell you after the show, Bish. We're going to get them to pay attention to us. And then, on the regular program, we're going to keep going with Lou and John. We're in smack dab in the middle of the 80s. We're going to finish that out strong. I think maybe do a little more Velvet Underground kind of stuff coming up. More good music.
Okay. Well, listen, I commend you immensely. Thank you for making your show and for being sweet and nice people to me personally and all your fans and followers. And you're enriching these communities. And I just want to say that with all gratitude. So thank you for this. We spent a lot of time together today, and I know you got other things to do. Ian, I believe, congratulations on your upcoming thing. Am I allowed to talk about
this? Yes.
You're getting married?
Sure, yeah. My nuptials, yes.
Congratulations on that. And
thank you.
And best of luck with everything. And Ian, Evan, thank you so much. I wish you the best luck in the future. I hope we talk soon.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Rish.
This is the best. You're the best. I don't want to put it to we really just, it's really great to have you be so generous to have us on. Oh. And it's like we podcasters got to stick together.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Well, once again, deep thanks to Ian and Evan of the Jokerman podcast, the Never Ending Stories podcast, for appearing on my podcast. In fact, the 761st episode of this podcast, which is called Creative Control, and is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available wherever you get your podcasts. If you can't find an episode that you've heard about and you're looking for it, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my monthly newsletter, please visit vishkana.com. You can like Creative Control on Facebook. You can follow the show on Twitter at @vishcreative, or you can follow me directly on Twitter and on Instagram at @vishkana. Also, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation that sustains this podcast. That is the primary source of revenue. It is, as I mentioned to Ian and Evan, a modest Patreon, but it's so meaningful to me that people support the show with their dollars and their listenership. It really does mean a lot. So, and by the way, $6 American or more a month grants you access to some exclusive content from my archives. If you're here for Bob Dylan chatter, I believe one of the first things I posted as a bonus cut from my Patreon is my interview with D.A. Pennebaker from, golly, when was it? It must have been 2007 or 8. I can't remember, but it was a long time ago. And, of course, he has since passed away. Anyway, I try to find little treats like that, and I put them up there on the Patreon. And for $6 or more American a month, you get access to that, and you get the episodes earlier and some other perks too. So please, I know people don't even, some of you don't even care about the perks. You just want to support the show, and that means a lot too. If you want to do any of those things or access any of those things, again, visit patreon.com/creativecontrol. Thank you. Thanks again to the amazing Alberta record retailer Blackbird Music, with physical locations in Edmonton and Calgary, but you can learn more about them and order things right from their website at blackbird.ca. Also want to thank Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee, respectively, in Guelph, Ontario, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton, Ontario, for their in-kind support for this show. I want to thank my friend Jim Guthrie for letting me use some music of his on the show. You can learn more about Jim at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Ian and Evan from Jokerman Podcast. I hope you will listen to their show. It's a fine and dandy one, and we become buddies, maybe. I think we're buddies. We're long-distance buddies. I don't know. Who am I to say? But it feels that way. They're great. I hope you subscribe to their show, and I hope you subscribe to this one and follow it. And tell your friends all about us and me. Me especially, in this case. It's my outro, goddammit. And spread the word about Creative Control if you can, and Jokerman. All right, you're good. You're good people. You listened this far. You must be. I think you're great. Thank you so much. I will talk to you very soon. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.